At 10 o'clock that night, Kuno stood at the bar in the Trailside Saloon and Dance Hall, slowly sipping his third beer of the evening while keeping an eye on the Batwings for the appearance of Hudson's crew. From what he remembered, and from Marcella's descriptions, he thought he'd recognize all of them, though he'd only seen Hudson and Wilkes. Saber shouldn't be too hard to pick out of a crowd. Marcella said he'd been named appropriately. He was tall, lean, hawk-nosed, and always wore a gray Confederate forage cap. O'Malley was big and shaggy, with a face like a Halloween pumpkin. Around Kuno, the crowd milled under a heavy cloud of tobacco smoke, while a gray-haired gent in a frayed frock coat and opera hat banged on a piano. Several waddies and pleasure girls danced, often tripping over each other's feet. Kuno turned away, his expression stony. He sipped his beer. Where were they? Surely if they were in town, they'd make the saloon rounds this evening. And they had to be in town. If they were headed into the rough country south of here, they'd need fresh horses and trail supplies. Kuno finished the beer and ordered another. He'd spent time in Kranzberg's four saloons, and he'd had too much to drink for accurate shooting, if the night came to that. But he suddenly didn't care. He drank a third of his next beer, standing with his back to the bar, jostled by the crowd around him, lost in the din, but keeping an eye peeled on the Batwings. As his eyes swept the room again, they caught on a familiar face turned toward him. It was the freighter Marcella had groined earlier. He was seated at a table about 20 feet out on the floor. His hat was tipped back on his head, and a long cheroot sagged from his lips. His drink-bleary, bulbous eyes penetrated Kuno with a savage stare. Kuno looked away, showing no interest. When he looked back, the man was still staring at him, and the other five men around the table were, too. The freighter chewed his cigar and said something to the others without removing his gaze from Kuno. Wanting no trouble with the freighter, Kuno took another sip from his beer and set it on the bar. He'd head to one of the other saloons for a while, return here in a couple of hours when the freighter had had his fill of liquor and cards and had moved on. With that intention, not caring if his retreat appeared cowardly, he turned and shoved his way toward the door, walking slowly but keeping his head turned enough that he could detect any fast movement behind him. He was two steps from the Batwings when his back prickled, as in the corner of his right eye, he saw the freighter jump to his feet. Kuno wheeled, unsnapping his trigger thumb.
You coward!
The freighter jutted an accusing arm at Kuno.
Get back here and face me like a man! You killed my partner, you son of a bitch!
All faces turned to the drunk freighter and then to Kuno. Nervously, the crowd parted between them. Kuno returned the man's stare, saying nothing, hands hanging at his sides.
You killed Mac.
The freighter turned to one of the men who had been sitting at the table, but who had scrambled away and was now standing off to the side, still holding his cards.
You seen it, didn't you, Earl?
Earl glared at Kuno.
I seen it.
The freighter returned his infuriated gaze to Kuno.
Well, say something for yourself, goddammit.
I reckon you said it all, friend. All I can add is if you touch that hog leg on your hip, you're gonna die tonight.
The freighter studied him up and down, squinting. Doubt flickered in his eyes. Then he spit the cheroot from his lips and stepped back from the table, holding his hands out from his hips.
You think you're pretty fast, eh?
Kuno stared at him.
All you yunkers think you're fast. You read too many stories. But all you're really fast for is the grave.
I don't know, JC. I seen him today, and he looked pretty darn fast to me.
Earl's warning evoked another flicker of doubt in the freighter's eyes. It was unnerving the way Kuno stared at him, saying nothing. Without moving his head, his gaze swept the room. Men and pleasure girls watched expectantly, smoke curling from their cigars and cigarettes, drinks clenched in their fists. The freighter could not back down. Not now, after he'd called Kuno's number. Kuno saw the grim resolve in the man's eyes. A second later, it was over. A single shot from Kuno's Colt slammed into JC's chest before the freighter had gotten a barrel free of his towed holster. Kuno holstered his smoking gun. When the marshal appeared several minutes later, having been summoned by one of the bartenders, Kuno was waiting for him by the bar, his back to the mahogany, a grim cast to his features. The marshal, and a tall, dark-haired deputy wielding a shotgun checked the freighter. Then, while the deputy and two other men hauled the freighter out the back, the marshal strode stiffly over to Kuno and stared up at him, thumbs tucked into the cartridge belt nearly hidden by his bulging belly.
I don't need to hear what happened. I can guess. He was trying to get even for his partner.
That's right.
Well, that's your bad luck. I want you out of town tomorrow morning before full light. Understand?
He gave me no choice.
Sorry, kid. I've had my fill.
The marshal shook his head and held out his hand.
I'll take your hog leg butt first. You can pick it up tomorrow on your way out of town.
You can't take my gun.
What if what? You get in trouble again? Guess you'll have to try something new, like talking your way out of it. Hand it over, or spend the night in the lockup.
Kuno stared at the thickly built lawman, who gazed up at Kuno, hand extended. Finally, Kuno palmed his Colt and set it in the marshal's open hand. The marshal stuck the gun behind his cartridge belt.
You're out of here tomorrow, before 9. If I see you after that, I'm gonna turn the key on you.
After spending a couple of minutes trying to calm down, Kuno stepped through the bat wings into the night, cursing Marcela Jimenez. He knew his having to kill two men in the past few hours wasn't directly her fault, but without her here, it wouldn't have happened. Now he would have to hide out from the marshal while scouring Kranzberg for the Hudson gang. Despite the marshal's warning, he intended to go nowhere until he'd either found the gang or had given up hope of finding them here. Somehow he'd find them. If not here, then elsewhere. He would never give up. Feeling naked without his .45, he turned left and walked up the street toward the livery barn where he'd stabled his horse. In his saddlebags was a spare Colt. He had no intention of searching for Hudson's gang unarmed. He'd taken 10 steps before two people walked out of an alley, stepping onto the boardwalk and strolling toward him. They were a man and a woman walking arm in arm. The man staggered as though drunk and nearly fell as he turned to nuzzle the woman's neck. Kuno was about to pass them when he stopped suddenly, gazing down at Marcela Jimenez. She looked up at him as the tall man nuzzled her cheek.
What? I must survive, no? Now that you let Paige Hudson get away. What would you have me do, sling hash for pennies?
The man lifted his head, which lolled drunkenly on his shoulders, and squinted his bleary eyes at Kuno.
Come on.
Marcela yanked the customer's arm, pushing and pulling him up the boardwalk. Kuno turned to watch them amble off in the darkness, Marcela leading the way. They paused near the trailside saloon, and Marcela guided the stumbling cowboy up an outside stairway. Apparently, she'd worked out a deal with the saloon's owner, whereby she could use one of the upstairs rooms for a cut of her profits. Kuno rubbed his jaw as she and the cowboy disappeared in the darkness. Then he turned and resumed his walk toward the livery barn. He was crossing the street at an angle when he heard something behind him.
Huh?
Wheeling, he touched his holster, forgetting the gun wasn't there. Peering at the line of stores silhouetted against the starry sky, he saw no one suspicious, only a few drovers in Texas hats and chaps milling around the hitch racks farther down the street where the saloons were still hopping. This end of the street was dark and quiet. Defenseless without his gun, Kuno continued on toward the livery barn, standing alone across the street, its peaked roof blocking the stars. He was about to pull one of the two big doors open when someone hit him a glancing blow on the back of his head. Stunned, he dropped to his knees. Paige Hudson shoved the 3-foot length of leaded rawhide behind his pistol belt and grabbed Kuno's right arm while Clevis O'Malley grabbed his left. They dragged Kuno's sagging bulk around the side of the livery barn into the dense shadows under the overhanging roof. Kenny Wilkes and Billy Sabre ran up behind them.
Is it him? Is it Massey?
It's him, all right.
Hudson gave Kuno a hard kick in the ribs.
I got a good look at him in the saloon window after he shot some freighter.
Hudson glared down at the young man, who shook his head from side to side, trying to clear the cobwebs. Hudson had hit him a pretty good blow with the quirt.
Well, we gonna kill him or what?
O'Malley lifted his revolver. Hudson grabbed O'Malley's wrist, sending wary glances up and down the street.
In the riverbed, out back.
He grabbed Massey's right arm and pulled.
Come on, Cleve, grab it, let's go.
Swimming up through the brain fog and summoning all his strength, Kuno heaved his arm free of Hudson's grip. Shoving himself up against the barn, he thrust the toe of his right boot into O'Malley's thigh. As the Irishman bent forward, Kuno turned left, whipping his arm out. He'd intended to hit the slight, bowler-headed man standing there in the face, but Kuno's right knee buckled, and his fist connected instead with Wilkes' left arm. Wilkes grabbed the arm, sidle-hopping into the shadows. Kuno was trying to push off his right knee when Hudson punched his jaw. Just then, Kuno felt the slug brush his left ear as he hit the dirt, his head swirling and teeth gnashing against the pain.
God damn it, Billy, I said no shooting!
What the hell was I supposed to do?
Some bitch opened my arm up!
Shit! Someone's shooting at us!
Kuno rolled onto his chest and covered his head.
Move it, you idiots! We'll get him next time!
As Kuno heard them retreating behind the bar, he lowered his arms and lifted his chin. A slender, jean-clad figure ran toward him. The curves belonged to a woman. Long, dark hair bounced on her shoulders beneath a man's felt hat, its acorn fastener swaying beneath her chin. Marcella Jimenez knelt beside Kuno, her 36 Smith & Wesson smoked in her slender hand.
Was it him? Was it Hassan?
Kuno's voice caught in his throat, the nearly unendurable pain in his head thumbing it back down his windpipe. In spite of the pain, he nodded and tried to rise. It was no use. His strength was gone, replaced by a head-spinning, heavy-limbed nausea.
I was him!
She bounded to her feet and ran down the side of the barn. She looked around for evidence she'd done any damage with a 36. She saw nothing, not even a blood splatter.
They got away! They got away!
She clapped her hands to her face, cuffing her hat off her head, letting it hang down her back from its thong. She stumbled back to Kuno and knelt down.
Damn it! Do you know where they are going?
She jerked his shoulder.
Do you know where they are going?
Kuno pushed himself up on his arms and legs.
Now, how in the hell would I know where they're going?
He squeezed his eyes closed against the flares going off behind his lids. Fatigue and fury hammered his head, right along with the pain. Beneath it, however, was the satisfaction of knowing Hudson's gang was in town.
Mierda!
She whipped her head around to look down the side of the barn where all four men had disappeared. She wanted to run after them, but she had no more shells for her pistol. The rest were in her room. A few minutes ago, from the top of the saloon's outside stairs, she'd seen two men pass on the boardwalk behind Kuno, as if following him. The darkness hid their features, but she had her suspicions. Abandoning her befuddled customer, Marcella had retrieved her pistol from her room, in her haste forgetting to grab spare shells, and descended the outside stairs at a run. Clinging to the railing as though at the rail of a sinking ship, the drunken cowboy had stared after her in slack-jawed awe. Not only was she out of ammunition, she reflected now, but she was only one woman against four men, four seasoned killers. She could not go after all four alone.
Mierda!
What the hell's going on over there?
She and Kuno turned to the street. Two shadows, one short and stocky, the other tall and broadly built, were heading this way from the other side of the street. The tall man carried a shotgun, the short man a pistol. Badges flashed on their vests.
Ah, shit.
Kuno pressed his fists to his temples. Bounding to her feet, not taking so much as a second glance at Kuno, she ran down the dark corridor between the livery barn and the feed store.
Stop!
The marshal and the deputy approached Kuno, who was sitting, bent legs spread on his butt.
Johnny, get after her, goddammit!
As the marshal stopped before Kuno, his deputy disappeared down the corridor. Kuno looked up at the marshal. The marshal looked down at Kuno.
I hate to keep singing the same hymn, but it wasn't my fault.
Kuno rolled his shoulders and waited for the clouds to clear. His head ached like hell, but he didn't feel so bad. Hudson was here in Kranzberg.
And I hate to beat the same drum. What in the hell kind of trouble you get yourself into now? And who the hell was the girl with the six-shooter?
Kuno probed the back of his head with his left hand where Hudson had nailed him with the leaded quirt. He looked at his blood-smeared fingers.
I reckon some cowpokes came up a little short at the faro tables and decided to turn me inside out.
That the same girl you was with earlier?
I didn't get a good look at her.
He didn't want to explain the real nature of the trouble to the marshal. Hudson and his gang were all his and only his.
Is that right? Troublemaking women just happen to follow you around, that it?
I reckon.
How many of these here cowpokes were there?
Didn't have time to count.
Just then the deputy walked toward them.
No luck, Marshal.
The big man approached, holding his shotgun barrel up.
That girl lit out like a mule with its tail on fire.
He frowned down at Kuno.
Say, isn't he that fella that shot that freighter?
That's him. Massey, wasn't it?
Kuno didn't say anything. In spite of his aching head, he was thinking about Hudson. He had a bull by the tail and would not let go.
Who's the girl?
He claims men rolled him, and the girl saved his hide. But he doesn't know who she was.
Well, she sure slung the lead. Doesn't look like she hit anything, though. Why do you suppose she run off so fast?
Yeah, why do you suppose?
The marshal scratched his head and glared at Kuno. Kuno shrugged again and eased himself to his feet. His head still grieved him terribly, but the world was not spinning quite as fast as before. He'd retrieve his gun from his saddlebags and see what he could still do tonight about Hudson.
Well, I reckon
I'll
be...
You're not going anywhere, except to the Skookum House.
You can't lock me up, Marshal. I was the one who was rolled. Thanks to you, I'm not even armed.
You might have been rolled all right, but you're going to spend the night in the lockup just the same. Give me time to stick a fork in your story and go over my wanted dodgers, and give you time to refresh your memory about the girl.
Kuno stared at the lawman, nostrils flaring.
I'm thinking you might be part of a bigger gang in town.
The marshal turned to the deputy with a cunning grimace.
A bigger gang may be at war with itself.
He looked at Kuno again.
Until I can get through my wanted dodgers, consider yourself a guest of the city of Kranzberg.
He jabbed his gun into Kuno's ribs.
Move.
Kuno turned to the deputy. The big man lowered his shotgun toward Kuno's belly, stuck his finger through the trigger guard, and smiled grimly through his mustache. Kuno hesitated. Hudson was here in Kranzberg, but for how long? Kuno needed to get after him. Now, tonight. He stared at the double-bore shotgun yawning at his middle. The deputy must have read his mind.
Go ahead, amigo. Try it. Save me swamping out your cell and fetching your breakfast in the morning.
A tense silence yawned. Kuno stared into the deputy's young but determined eyes. He shuttled his gaze to the marshal, who gazed back at him, his own Remington aimed at Kuno's side, a thin smile on his red mottled, pear-shaped face. A nerve twitched in Kuno's jaw. He couldn't avenge July's murder if he was dead. Resigned to the situation, he turned and started walking slowly along the street. The movement caused the hammer in his head to resume its pounding. His feet felt like lead.
Thought you'd see it my way.
The next morning, Kuno Massey thought he'd heard July screaming. Opening his eyes and seeing the thick ceiling logs and barred window through which bright morning light slanted, he remembered with a pang of consternation that the tin stars had thrown him in jail. His head thudded sharply and then relented a little. Maybe his marbles were settling. He pushed himself up and swung his feet to the floor, lowered his head to his hands. The movement had reawakened the throbbing steam engine in his head. When he looked up, he saw a tray on the rough wooden table. On the tray sat a tin mug of coffee, a bowl of lumpy oatmeal, and a plate of buttered toast. Kuno wasn't hungry, but he reached for the toast anyway. Cold. He sipped the tepid coffee. Looking around, he saw the two other men occupied the cell block. One was a tall, bald black man, curled on his cot. Another was a wizened old man with a white beard he combed with both hands while sitting on the edge of his cot, staring at the floor. Kuno took another bite of the toast for sustenance and drank the coffee. It made him feel a little better. The only thing that would make him feel anywhere near well, however, was getting out of this jail cell and getting back after Paige Hudson. The sole good that had come from last night was knowing that Hudson's gang was in town, but they wouldn't be in town long.
Hey, Marshal! Time to let me out of here.
The man had no legal right to hold him. Kuno hadn't done anything wrong. But he also knew that small-town lawmen did not always pay heed to legal rights. But the marshal had had time to check his wanted dodgers and see that Kuno wasn't wanted. By the law, anyway.
Marshal!
The black man lifted his head from his pillow.
Be still, will you? I'm trying to sleep.
Kuno waited, listening. Finally, the cell block door opened, and a slight young man, maybe 13 or 14, appeared. He had freckles and a close-fitting cap of curly red hair.
What's the problem in here?
Where's the marshal?
Busy. There was a shooting in town last night. An Arizona Ranger was killed. He and Johnny are out with a posse.
So what's he gonna do, leave me here to rot? I have to get out of here.
The kid scrunched up his thin lips and squinted one eye. It made him look more comical than nasty.
You'll just have to wait. And don't give me no trouble, because trouble's my middle name.
With a punctuating nod, the kid ducked back into the main office, drawing the door closed behind him. The black man glanced at Kuno, then lowered his bald head again to his pillow.
That's Jug, Marshall's nephew, the jailer.
Kuno paced in the cell for most of the day, pausing only to roll a smoke or stare in frustration out the barred window at the grassy lot behind the jail, where an occasional brindle dog passed and where trash and tumbleweeds blew. Hudson and his men probably never thought about the young woman they'd killed, much less had any regrets about killing her. The realization made Kuno's jaws ache with rage. Around 3, a thunderstorm rolled in, filling the lot with an eerie green-purple light and cloaking it with a pale, slanting rain. The marshal appeared a half hour later, soaked to the bone and looking frustrated. He wore a yellow rain slicker and, to Kuno's relief, had a ring of keys in his hand.
About time.
Kuno donned his hat when the marshal had released the other two men and was making his way to Kuno's cell.
Sounds to me like you want to have another night on the town.
The marshal paused with the key before the lock. His eyes were threatening.
That'd be a pity, too, since I didn't see your face on any of my wanted dodgers. I could always hold you till the new batch came in, though.
Kuno dropped his eyes, trying to look diffident.
Sorry.
That's more like it.
The marshal opened the door. He wasn't wearing his hat, and his thin, dark brown hair lay in wet swirls against his scalp.
Who are you chasing?
Kuno had been wondering if it could have been Hudson.
4 hard cases killed a ranger last night. The man must have recognized the gang in one of the saloons and followed him over to a brothel. The fool should have waited for help. Instead, he's pushing up Octillo on Boot Hill. Huh. My deputy and the ranger's partner are still out with a small posse. The rest of us turned back on account of the rain.
The marshal impaled Kuno with a hard scrutiny.
Say, I wonder if they're the same men that jumped you last night.
Kuno shrugged, his face revealing nothing. The bastards had left town.
Beats the hell out of me.
The marshal rubbed his chin thoughtfully, squinting his pale, weary eyes.
Their leader's a maggot named Hudson. Ever hear him?
Kuno froze, one hand on the open cell door.
Hudson?
That's right. Sound familiar?
Never heard of a marshal.
The marshal kept staring at Kuno as raindrops slid down his face and neck. He obviously had his suspicions, but he was too tired to pursue them. Finally, he turned and headed for the open cell block door. Kuno followed him, barely containing his urgent need to run, to get after Hudson. In the front office, the marshal produced Kuno's Colt and gun belt from a drawer in his battered roll top.
Now, get out of town and don't come back.
Kuno wrapped the belt around his waist and cinched it. Then set his hat gingerly on his head, which still ached, but with less vigor than earlier.
Intend to do just that, Marshal.
He went out, closing the door behind him. He stood on the hard patch of sunken ground under the awning, watching the rain pelt the mud puddles up and down the street and slick the backs of horses hunched at tie rails. The mercantile reared directly across the street. Several freighters stood around on the loading dock, smoking under the awning and chatting while sending occasional glances skyward. The clouds appeared to be lifting. Gunmetal color was running toward gray, with faded yellow splotches around the edges. Hudson was on the run, heading south. But this rain would obliterate his tracks. Not even an Apache could track him after a gully washer like this one. The knowledge was a sharp-edged pit in Kuno's belly. He stood there thinking for several minutes. Finally, an idea occurred to him. He winced at it, repelled by it, because it involved the girl. He wanted nothing more to do with the obstinate Mexican, but he could think of no other way. Finally, he tipped his hat over his eyes and trotted across the street, hunching his shoulders against the deluge. He followed the boardwalk to the Trailside Saloon. Due to the rain, there was an unusually boisterous crowd milling inside for this time of the day. The din was constant, and cigarette smoke hung heavy beneath the rafters, fighting the fresh smell of the rain wafting through the bat wings. Kuno looked around, scanning the room with narrowed eyes. Not finding who he was looking for, he pushed his way to the back of the room and climbed the stairs. On the second story, six or seven doors faced each side of the long, narrow hall. Kuno was moving down the shabbily carpeted corridor, listening at the doors, when one opened a few feet ahead on the right. A short, burly man with a carefully trimmed beard, bowler hat, and round, wire-framed spectacles stepped out, flushed and glassy-eyed. Seeing Kuno, he grinned around the freshly lit stogie in his mouth.
Ho, ho, ho. If you're looking for the mechs, you're in for a treat.
Kuno opened the door the man had just closed and stepped inside. It was a small room with a single grimy window and a lumpy brass-framed bed. Marcella sat on the edge of the bed, her feet on the floor, her slender, naked back facing Kuno behind the dark curtain of her hair. She was lighting a cigarette, blowing smoke and waving out the match. She turned her head to one side, but not really looking at him, revealing a small purple birthmark on her neck.
Hola, amigo. Make yourself comfortable, and I will be with you after my cigarette.
Kuno stood stiffly just inside the door, which he hadn't bothered to close. He noted only half-consciously that she looked lovely naked, small and fragile, with vanilla skin and heavy breasts. Her back couldn't have been much wider than his two hands placed side by side, halved by her delicate, curving spine.
Where's Hudson headed?
Surprised, she whipped her head around. Seeing him, she wrinkled her nose and turned back to the wall.
Is it the man-tracker who needed a woman to save his life?
Where's Hudson headed?
Why don't you track him? You are such a good tracker.
He walked stiffly around the bed, clamped his left hand around her neck, slammed her back on the rumpled sheets, and drew his Colt. He pressed the barrel to her forehead and thumbed back the hammer. She stared up at him fearlessly, her brown eyes glazed with a gray light from the window.
Go ahead. Pull the trigger of your big gun.
You don't think I will?
No, I don't.
To his exasperation, she smiled.
Do you think I would care if you did? What do I have to lose?
She moved her head slightly, sliding her eyes over the fly-specked plaster walls, the cluttered dresser with its cracked mirror and chipped water pitcher and bowl. In the bowl were coins, tips from satisfied customers, no doubt, and cigarette butts. Her clothes lay in a rumpled pile in a corner.
All my life, I have been either an outlaw's woman or a whore. I have never had a real life or been a real person anyone cared about except to lay between my legs.
Her brown eyes had grown nearly black, the even blacker pupils contracting and expanding.
Why would I fear death?
Still pressing the gun to her head, he stared down at her. She stared impassively back at him, her Spanish dark eyes slightly narrowed around the barrel. It was an off-putting stare, and it made him feel tired, hopeless, and angry.
Come on.
Smiling inscrutably, she reached up and placed both her hands on the one he had around her neck. He was no longer applying any pressure. She slid the hand down to her naked breast, stretching her lips in a smoky smile.
Why don't we spend the day here, huh? Neither one of us really wants to go after Hudson anymore. You've seen how he is. It is not reasonable. Besides, you know you want me.
She touched his fingers to a nipple.
What man doesn't want me? Even one in love with his wife's ghost.
He looked down at his hand on her full, firm breast. He pulled it away as though from something hot, and before he knew what he was doing, he slapped her with it. The blow whipped her head to the side. She turned back to him slowly, a small cut on her lower lip leaking blood. Her smile had faded, but now it returned, mocking.
No.
She spread her knees.
Not even for free? After all you've done to help me get my gold back?
Rage burning inside him, he whipped his hand back to hit her again, but stopped. He lowered the hand and turned to the window, holstering his gun. He stared down at the muddy street, getting his temper under control. After a time, she pulled on a wrapper and stood behind him at the window.
You must have loved her very much. Not many men have refused me.
Sorry to sully your run.
Yes, at least I had that.
She moved forward and looked up at his face gravely, her guile and obstinacy returning in a flash.
If you are still going after them, you crazy gringo, then I am going with you.
I thought you decided it wasn't reasonable.
If you have not, I have not. It is worth the risk. Without the gold, I have nothing.
He looked down at her. She stared up at him with her round brown eyes that had very little girlish innocence left in them. But there was some. At least enough to believe in buried treasure and in the myth that gold could make her happy. He could think of no way short of torture to get her to tell him where Hudson was headed, and she'd already called his bluff once.
You sure you know where he's going?
No. Rick told me only that he hid the gold south of Wild Horse Basin.
Wild Horse Basin?
You have not heard of it?
No.
Then I guess you will need me to guide you. Not many know of it, and you will not find it on any map.
I reckon I don't have much choice, do I? Lady, you could drive me to violence.
She smiled and wrapped both hands around his bicep, squeezing.
Maybe later. Under the stars, eh?
He jerked his arm from her grasp.
Get dressed and meet me in the livery barn in 20 minutes.
His face flushed with disgust, Ranger Jake Craig gigged his sorrel around a bend in the powdery trail. The sun blistered his cheeks and the sage tickled his nostrils, making him feel constantly on the verge of a sneeze.
Goddamn locals don't give a rat's ass if a ranger gets blown to a bloody pulp.
He eyed the horse prints, gouging the sand and clay-colored dust beneath him.
Yeah, well, if it had been one of their own, you'd think most of the posse would have hightailed it back to town? Shit.
Craig was still piss-burned because the posse that had headed out of Kranzberg with him last night, after he'd found the bloody body of his partner in the yard of Miss Kate's place, had turned tail and headed home after a storm had obliterated Hudson's tracks.
Nothing against your partner, Jake, but he had no business walking into Kate's place alone like that, with no one to back his play.
Kranzberg's deputy marshal, Johnny Somerville, rode just behind Craig on a long-legged steel dust. The deputy was tall, with a shock of dark hair covering his forehead beneath his wide-brimmed hat. He carried a double-barreled greener, the shotgun's butt propped against his hip, and had an ivory-gripped Colt and a custom-tooled holster on his thigh. Craig liked Somerville about as much as he'd like a .44 slug in the ass. The smug, cow-brained deputy bristled at taking orders from a ranger, never mind that Craig had fought with the Confederacy when Somerville was still filling his britches with green goo. Craig could put up with a lot of things, but a snooty, snot-nosed local lawman whose dream was to read about himself in Eastern magazines was not one of those things.
I mean, he left you a note saying he'd spotted the Hudson gang in town, right?
Yeah, he did.
It was true. Earl Diamond had left word at the front desk of Craig's hotel. But Earl hadn't bothered to wait till Craig, who'd been thumping a pretty Mexican whore, had received the message and gone to his partner's aid. Instead, Diamond had gone on over to Miss Kate's place by himself. No doubt because he'd been an infamous skinflint and hadn't wanted to share the reward money the gang had on its head with Craig. Craig didn't voice his speculation to Johnny Somerville. True, Diamond was a skinflint, but he and Craig were partners. And out here, on the Arizona frontier, that meant something that neither Somerville nor any of the other locals could understand.
But us rangers protect you folks, and we deserve better backing than what the town marshal and the posse demonstrated last night.
Well, I'm here.
Somerville glanced at the six other posse members riding behind him.
Old Daddy's here. Walt's here. The teacher's here.
Shut up.
Craig reined his sorrel to a halt.
What?
Is that fire?
Craig squinted across the rocky, sun-bleached wastes toward the column of black smoke unfurling about 5 miles away, above a scarp painted butter yellow by the 3 o'clock sun. The rangy deputy followed Craig's gaze.
Could be engines.
Yeah, it could be.
Craig tried to ignore the anger that galled his loins every time Somerville opened his mouth.
Could also be the men we're looking for.
Doubt that. They've been heading due south. The smoke's way west.
Again, Craig swallowed his anger. This shaved tail had no respect for rangers. That was a sad, frustrating fact. It wasn't so much what he said, but the tone in which he said it. Saying nothing, Craig gigged his sorrel into a slow walk up the mesa, which had been pummeled and twisted by eons of wind and unrelenting sun into bleached ridges and sandblasted ravines. The trail was a slender game path, sheathed in spindly desert shrubs and sand-mottled boulders.
I sure don't like the idea of engines.
It was Cyril Old Daddy McAllister who ran the express office. Old Daddy was a slender, gray-bearded raisin, armed with a rusty cap-and-ball revolver, single-shot Cook and Brother rifle, and tarnished Green River knife he'd used when he'd first come west 30 years ago to trap beaver. For the occasion, he'd even dusted off his deerhide hat, which had aged to the color of sun-bleached bone, and elk-skin leggings with holes in the knees.
What do you expect, Old Daddy? This is engine country, ain't it? Just keep your old eyes peeled and your old mouth shut.
Jake Craig felt like commanding the Tin Star to do the same, but kept silent as he rode. He contained his hatred of the deputy, staring at the smoke while looking for his best course up the gravelly mesa, letting his sorrel wend its way through occasional cedars and creosote shrubs. The sun was a blazing iron on his face and neck. He felt his nose blistering. It wasn't unendurable, however, when Craig thought of the bounty on the heads of the Hudson gang. Page himself was worth $2,000, dead or alive. Craig had promised to split the money with the six posse members who had remained with him instead of following the hapless town marshal back to Kranzberg last night. But it still amounted to a sizable stake for, say, a gambling parlor in Prescott. Craig felt a little guilty, thinking of money rather than revenge. But then old Earl was a big boy. He knew the chance he was taking trying to squeeze Craig out of the bounty money.
Try to spend it now, Earl.
Where in the hell are we going, Craig? You sure you know this country? Maybe I should ride point.
Somerville rode directly behind Craig, followed by the stagecoach messenger, Walter Grievous, Old Daddy McAllister, and the out-of-work drovers, Lewis Trotter and Wade Greenhill, who had thrown in with the posse while still drunk and whose faces now appeared pale as bird shit. Bringing up the rear was the schoolteacher, Martin Plum, who rode a white mare he'd rented from the livery barn. Clad in suit pants, string tie, and polished brogans, Plum had made no bones about being deathly tired of teaching and wanting a stake for his own ranch. He was hoping the reward would make his dream possible at last.
Check out that smoke there, lawman. Where does it look like I'm going?
You think it's Hudson, do you?
I have a feeling.
What are you boys going to do with your cuts?
Somerville looked over to the other riders.
Me? I'm going to tell the marshal to kiss my ass, and I'm going to run for county sheriff. Once I got that, I'm going to ask Miss Angie to be my wife.
Who?
Craig just couldn't stand the sound of Somerville's voice. If he had to be on the trail with the boy for very long, he knew he'd end up carving out his voice box with his Barlow knife. Slowly.
Miss Angie Harmon. She's my betrothed, you might say. Her father is the biggest rancher in the county.
Betrothed my ass! The day Ray Harmon lets his daughter marry you, Johnny, my boy, is the day pigs will start flying rings around the sun.
Craig turned to see Somerville, who scowled, lips pooched angrily, the black of his mustache standing out against his flesh.
All right, everyone, now quiet down. It's Apache country, for Christ's sakes.
God damn, he hated that kid. He entertained himself with the idea of drilling a bullet through the Tin Star on his chest, making it look like an accident. Who'd contest it? It took the posse a good hour to wind down the other side of the mesa. They bottomed out in an ancient, boulder-strewn riverbed and came upon tracks in the soft, wind-scalloped sand.
Well, I'll be damned.
Somerville leaned away from his horse to scour the ground with his fishy gaze.
The old ranger's right. I recognize that toed-out hoof print from the other side of the divide. It has to be one of Hudson's men.
Why don't you talk a little louder, Somerville? Old Geronimo's growing hard of hearing.
Yeah, talk a little louder, you goddamn tin horn.
Grievous shoved his belligerent, unshaven face at the deputy.
All of you, shut up and follow me.
Craig felt like the teacher of an unruly Sunday school class.
Smoke's rising over the ridge yonder. They could be leading us into a trap. Keep your eyes peeled and your weapons ready.
Craig moved out and the others followed in a ragged line, riding slowly, watching the rocks and ridges around them. Keying on the thinning column of smoke, Craig crossed a wash and urged his sorrel up a low divide between two rocky buttes. As the others spread out beside him, he gazed into the hollow in which a wagon and a small shack were burning. Flames licked up around the charred wagon bed and the logs of the cabin, which had been built against a cliff. The cabin's roof had collapsed, making the place little more than an ash heap. Before the cabin lay two bodies, one face down, arms and legs spread, the other on its side, face twisted back as if peering over its shoulder. A dead mule lay just beyond the dead men, its rounded belly dark with blood.
That looks like engine work.
Well, you're a lobo, pup.
Old Daddy gazed into the hollow.
Engines would have baked those men over the fire after skinning them alive.
Craig shucked his saddle gun from its scabbard and hefted it meaningfully.
Who wants to ride down with me while the others stay here and cover us?
I do.
That's what I was afraid of.
Craig looked at the others. He couldn't tell if the drovers were scared or sick with the bottle flu. They hadn't said anything except to each other for hours. The teacher, Plum, looked silently determined, sitting erect in his saddle, straw hat shading his scholarly face, sweat basting his striped collarless shirt to his chest and flat belly. Old Daddy scowled down at the cabin and rolled a wad of chew from one side of his mouth to the other. The big rifle he held across his saddle bows belonged to another time. Craig cocked his Winchester and looked at Somerville.
All right, all right. Think before you do anything. Follow my lead.
The deputy only scowled at him.
Let's go.
Craig kneed his horse down the hollow, taking it slow, running his gaze along the rocky slope on his right, then peering behind the cabin. The flames were an opaque orange in the bright sunlight, licking up around the blackened logs and white ashes heaped like snow. The fire was dying. Craig figured it had been set a couple of hours ago. That'd be about right. He figured the gang to be about 2 hours ahead of the posse. Nerves throughout his body crackled as he swung his gaze around absently, caressing his rifle trigger with a finger sweating inside a glove. The gang would be 2 hours ahead if they weren't lingering around here to ambush Craig's posse, that is. He glanced at Johnny Somerville, riding abreast of him, chin jutting. That kid was too stupid to be scared. From under the brim of his tall hat, he stared around at the rocks like he was looking for game. Craig stopped his sorrel near the dead men. One had gray hair wisping around a pink pate. He'd fallen oddly, so that his bearded face stared back over his shoulder and up at the sky, teeth and eyes gleaming. What was left of his eyes, that is. The buzzards had already been feasting. The other man had red-brown hair, bloody and matted, where he'd been shot in the back of his head. He appeared to be somewhere in his late 30s. Both men were dressed in patched duck trousers, suspenders, and low-heeled boots. Hard rock miners, no doubt. They'd probably had a sluice box around here somewhere.
Why do you suppose Hudson killed these men?
For the fun of it, probably.
Craig was looking around at the rocks again, watching for a movement or a sun flash off a rifle barrel. At least he hoped Hudson had shot the miners for the fun of it and had not done all this killing and burning just to draw the posse in where he could get them all off his trail in one fell swoop. The sun beat down brassily. The slight breeze spun a fine line of dust around the horse's hooves. It was a dragon's breath, offering no relief. Craig walked his horse farther down the hollow, where he saw a mound of rubble and sluice boxes near a spring the miners had dug out of a wash. Their trash heap was nearby, a smelly collection of rotten food, cans, jars, and a few whiskey bottles, all strewn about by scavengers. Seeing nothing fishy, Craig walked the sorrel back to the deputy, who had dismounted and was checking out the cabin. Craig waved to the rest of the posse up on the rocky knoll, and they filed down to join him. First Plum, then Grievous and Old Daddy, and then the drovers picking their way down the rocky slope. Craig jerked his head toward the slope opposite the cabin. A stone rolled, coming to rest behind a boulder. A man stepped out from behind another boulder, aiming a rifle at the hollow. Craig's heart skipped a beat. As he brought his own rifle up to his shoulder, he watched three more men step out from behind boulders and spindly shrubs and raise rifles to their cheeks. Hey! Craig had his gun up and was trying to settle a bead on one of the gang members when something ripped through his side, spinning him around and dropping him to his knees, the rifle leaping from his hands and clattering on the rocks. He flailed there, trying to stand, hearing the shots and the bullets spanging off rocks and plunking into human flesh and horsehide. Holding his side, Craig dropped to his shoulder and glanced toward the cabin. Quickly, the horses ran off as their new owners went out dead on the ground. Craig peered at the opposite slope, seeing little but powder smoke and dust. The squishing sound, he realized with horror, was his hand squeezing his own spilling innards.
Don't kill the lawman! Don't kill him, Cleavis! God damn it! Stay away from him! He's mine!
Craig reached for his rifle, but it was too far away. He tried to draw his revolver, but his right arm, hell, his whole right side, was numb. He stared through the smoke. Shadowy figures approached. Several crouched forward over their barrels. A medium-tall man moved toward Craig through the dust, his features gradually focusing as if through a telescope lens. He aimed a rifle out from his hip. The man's light brown hair fell over his ears and collar. He wore a tunneled hat trimmed with tin and had two matching white scars on his sun-ridden cheeks. His small, deep-set eyes swam with insanity, their cold black pupils fixed hungrily on Craig. Paige Hudson approached the ranger. He stopped, placed a fist on a hip, and grinned as though at a long-lost pal.
Hi there, lawman. Oh, do I got some fun in store for you.
Kuno and Marcella did not cut the posse's sign until late that day, several hours after the rain had quit and the sun had come out. They followed the meandering trail through the sun-scorched wasteland until dark. While alone, Lobo howled amongst the purple ridges. They made camp in a box canyon beneath ridges stippled with stunt cedars and Indian vetch. They set out early the next morning, following the posse's trail up a broad, rocky mesa. Kuno figured they'd follow the trail as long as they had one. When and if they ran out of trail, Marcella would lead him to Wild Horse Basin. Kuno would track them from there. Kuno rode Renegade, trailing a pack horse outfitted with trail supplies. Marcella rode her Pinto, as moody and high-strung as she was. About 10 o'clock that morning, Kuno saw the buzzards, black winged specks over a distant butte. He shucked his Winchester from its boot and rode with the gun across his saddle bows. When he and Marcella topped the divide over the hollow, they reined their mounts to a halt and stared down. Kuno's gut clenched. Below, several bodies and three horses lay twisted and strewn around the charred rubble of a burned-out cabin. Dark red blood stained the sand and cactus.
Wait here.
Steering Renegade into the hollow, he peered around cautiously, his eyes lingering over the nine bodies lying in bloody heaps before the cabin and wagon, both of which were little more than white ash heaps and a few fire-blackened logs. The rocky ground was scored with hoof prints. Blood-spattered shell casings were strewn about like jackstraws. Kuno saw that the three horses he'd seen from the ridge were actually two horses and a mule. What had attracted Kuno's eyes over and over again as he rode slowly amidst the carnage was a curved saber sticking blade up out of the ground, a few feet from one of the dead horses. Impaled upon the tip was a human head, eyes bulging, tongue protruding, yellow teeth glistening. The face was gaunt and pale as porcelain. Curly gray hair lay matted flat to the scalp and was crawling with flies. Lying nearby was a headless body, arms outspread, one boot crossed over a knee. The torso was so matted with blood that Kuno could barely make out the Arizona Ranger's badge pinned to the deerhide vest. The girl walked her horse up behind him. Both mounts spooked at the grisly sight, sidestepping and flicking their ears. Finally, the girl galloped off, stopped her horse several yards away, and jumped out of the saddle. After briefly inspecting the other bullet-riddled bodies, Kuno estimated that most of the men had been dead since late yesterday afternoon. He rode over to the girl. She was drinking water from her canteen, facing away from the carnage. She turned to Kuno, her face ashen.
Paige Hudson is a savage. Why did he cut off the man's head?
To warn anyone else thinking about following him.
Kuno slipped his canteen strap over his saddle horn.
That'd be my guess.
He took a long drink, washing down his own bile. When he lowered the canteen, he glanced at the impaled head again.
Sure you don't want to just tell me where Hudson's headed? Might save you a lot of misery.
She wiped her hand across her mouth. When she'd hung her canteen back on her saddle, she opened her saddlebags and produced her six-shooter, holster, and cartridge belt. She wrapped the rig around her slender waist, tongued the flap, and cinched it.
I have seen evidence before of Hudson's savagery.
Her gun and holster looked too big on her. As she towed a stirrup and swung up onto her horse, the pistol interfered with her movements.
Let's go.
They rode hard through the desert wastes, trailing the pack horses and following Hudson's sign, which the gang had done nothing to hide. It was tough, hot going, and Kuno saw the wear on the girl's face. He could tell by the way she fidgeted on her saddle that her backside was getting sore. Still, she did not complain or slow her pace. By the end of that day, Kuno judged by the tracks that they had closed the gap between themselves and the outlaws by several miles. The gang might have been only a few miles away. It was a high, small moon, and after stopping for a brief supper of hardtack and jerky washed down with water, they continued riding by moonlight. Even by moonlight, night riding was dangerous in this country, with deep ravines and canyons opening around them. But Kuno felt a steely, barely contained rage spurring him onward. His desire to close the gap between himself and the killers became more of an obsession with every clattering step of Renegade's hooves.